Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. As if you didn't know how to make a fluffernutter. Two slices of bread, a layer of peanut butter, and a scoopful of gooey white marshmallow fluff. Well, fluff turns 100 this year. What is it about marshmallow fluff that continues to delight after a century? If anyone has the answer, it's Mimi Graney. Because back in 2006, she founded the annual What the Fluff Festival in Somerville's Union Square. And she's now out with a new book called Fluff, The Sticky Sweet Story of an American Icon. She joins us in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks very much for having me.
It's great to have you. This is a delightful way to end the week, let me tell you. But I also want to let listeners know, call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. If you have a favorite fluff memory or you want to opine about your love or maybe not so much love for this classic New England treat. So Mimi, take us back to the very beginning. What's the creation story of fluff? Who invented it and why?
Well, it was our specific recipe of marshmallow fluff was invented by Archibald Query in 1917. He was a French-Canadian confectioner, had come to live in Franklin when he was seven, and then eventually settled in Somerville and was making fluff and selling it door to door. He had a home-based kitchen. And then during World War One, he had, because of sugar shortages, to shelve his product. And then another company took it up, Durkee Mower, who'd been making it since 1920.
I see. But even in those early days, I understand there was some sort of, there was a fluff controversy in terms of, there was a competitor or someone else who said that they had begun selling a similar product in 1910?
So there were a number of different marshmallow creams.
Okay.
So Durkee Mower's fluff has sort of so taken over the market. People think that they are the only one. But there were a number of other ones. There was the Limpert brothers in New Jersey had emerged later on when Marshmallow Fluff was looking to trademark the name. The Limpert brothers said, we have the name Marshmallow Fluff. And they eventually came to a decision to share the trademark. But back in the 19-teens, there were a number of different ones. For example, Snowflake Marshmallow Cream that was made out of Melrose, and that was the biggest local competitor to fluff.
Okay, so before we get to more of the natural history of marshmallow fluff, I have to ask you, I mean, you started the festival in Somerville. I mean, why do you love fluff so much?
You just can't talk about fluff without giggling and laughing. And for a long time, I had known about Archibald Query inventing fluff. And as soon as I would mention, because I love sharing Somerville trivia whenever possible, people would just immediately start telling stories about, I have fluff in my cabinet right now. My mother wouldn't let me eat fluff and udders. It just invites conversation. So it felt like a great thing to bring people together in for a festival.
And where did the idea of putting fluff and peanut butter between two pieces of white bread come from?
So that was actually Emma Curtis of Snowflake Marshmallow Cream. She had initially actually lived in Somerville, so we can claim her as our own as well. Snowflake Marshmallow Cream, she called it a Liberty Sandwich. She and her brother who ran the company were direct descendants of Paul Revere, so we're not sure whether she was naming it for their pedigree or because it was a tribute during World War I to limit your consumption of meat. So this was like a protein-rich sandwich.
With the peanut butter.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, so there's a very interesting historical and economic history to fluff here because you write that Boston or the Boston area for a long time was really a center for confectionery production. And that's one of the reasons why fluff was able to get a foothold here, if I could put it that way.
Yeah, the very first commercial production of chocolate happened here in Boston with Baker's Chocolate. And then because of our transportation and our cool climate, it really made it possible for confectioners to operate their businesses. So at the turn of the 20th century, Boston was the number one candy manufacturer in the world, with giant factories with 1,000 people in them dipping chocolates and making caramels and toffees and all kinds of things. and because we had a number of major innovations in Boston as well. Granulated sugar was invented in Boston, the egg beater, the electric mixer, all the stuff I didn't know until I started here.
My face is like, wow. I mean, all this culinary innovation. Of course, unfortunately, granulated sugar is considered the great evil now, but... But back, you know, at this time, sugar was actually considered healthy for you?
Yeah, it was, gives you energy. It was a really portable means for fast food. So candy bars were America's first fast food. Some of them actually were called, like, lunch.
Okay, so there's a couple more bits of the natural history here before we move forward to other aspects of fluff. This has been a day where Jamie Bologna, our producer, who's been doing all the research for us on this, he kept turning around and be like, "Did you know it's da 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 about fluff?" And we would all turn around and be like, "Really? Wow, it's amazing!" So help us out. This is going to make us good for pub trivia or an appearance on Jeopardy here. Marshmallow eating actually dates back all the way to
the Egyptians,
ancient Egypt.
Yes.
That blew me away. Tell me about that.
So the origins of marshmallow is really from the marshmallow plant, and that root is very viscous, almost like the sliminess of okra. So back in ancient Egypt, it was mixed with honey and nuts and was food for royalty and for the gods. And then eventually it was used medicinally. So you would do that to soothe your throat and deal with coughs. And then because sugar was medicinal as well, let's add marshmallow root sap and sugar together. And apothecaries started manufacturing them as little tender pillows. And then they said, let's forget about the medicinal aspect. Unless they're just delicious.
Let's stop fooling ourselves. Exactly.
Yeah. So then they started making them with gelatin. And they were incredibly popular. Sort of if you think of like the 1970s fondue pot, in the 1920s, it was marshmallow toasting parties. The flappers would get together and have toasting parties.
Wow. Okay. Well, we can't have a conversation about fluff without having it here in the studio. So we have a good old jar of it here. And Jamie Bologna, again, our magnificent producer, did some baking last night. He's done something called Harvard Squares, or a base of graham cracker crumbs, butter. Right, Jamie? Butter.
Probably a whole stick of butter.
Pretty much. So. Melted fluff and milk chocolate walnuts and flaked coconut. They're really good. I had like six of them earlier today.
My mom makes them as seven-layer cookies.
Yeah. What's your favorite way of enjoying fluff?
A big mug of hot chocolate with a spoon of fluff that just sort of melts. As a kid, it was really... the hot chocolate was a delivery device for the fluff.
That sounds like a good way of doing it. Well, let's take a quick call here. John is calling from Framingham. You're on the air, John.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to comment. I had worked with a young gentleman in the Native public schools. I worked as a custodian. And during the lunchtime, I had noticed this young person whipped out this humongous jar of fluffernut and peanut butter as well. And I said, what are you going to do with that? He said, this is the only thing I eat my entire life. There's no fruits, no vegetables, nothing. He just literally lived on fluffernutter and peanut butter. I couldn't believe it. I kept asking him, I said, can I make you something else? Because I went to cooking school. No. That's it. Fluffernutter is my whole life. I said, how's your cholesterol and your health? Oh, I'm overweight, but I just love this stuff. And the doctor said, just keep eating that fluffernutter.
The doctor told him to keep eating it. John, thank you so much for your call. I mean, the passion there for this confection, really, it's heartwarming.
Well, hearing about having it in the schools, people probably remember the big fluffer nutter kerfluffle that happened a few years ago with Senator Barrios was looking to limit how often the public schools were actually serving it as part of the lunch program to just once a week. And it somewhat kind of ended his political career. It was such a high drama.
There are some
event.
Things you just don't mess with, right, in New England, and fluff is is amongst them. Now, there is so much fascinating history here, because in your book, you write about how fluff has a connection to the commercialization of radio. And, you know, given that we're radio people, we really have to talk about this. What role did fluff play in that?
So fluff started in 1920, and early radio stations were just emerging right after World War I as well. Previously, it was mostly used for military uses and by ships. And one of the first radio stations in the country, I also learned this, started in West Medford here in Massachusetts. And the radio then was, because they were using the public airways, was non-commercial. So because the radio stations needed to figure out a way to be able to pay the performers, they would have sponsors. And because they couldn't do a commercial, they would just name the performers after the products that were sponsoring them. So Fluff sponsored the Flufferettes, which was a radio performers. And that actually continued even once radio became fully commercial, all the way into the early 50s.
Well, we actually have a clip here that includes a couple of seconds from, or it is a couple of seconds of the Flufferettes. This is from the 1930s on WNAC radio here in Boston. So let's listen.
For something delicious, you know well enough, you will get your wishes with marshmallow fluff.
Tune in next week at the same time for more Flufferette melodies. Your announcer is Hal Miller. This is the Yankee Network.
Well, so not only was this the start or connected to the start of the modern advertising on radio, as you were talking about, but you also write about how fluff plays a role in a real transformation in food production overall, or it's representative of transformation.
Well, the fluff factory in 1950, when it modernized, was one of the sort of... It's so interesting now to call it the modern factory because it really hasn't changed since then to do... a kind of continuous line production and moving the fluff from the third floor, and it goes down into the packing area down below. And it was, I think when people think about fluff now, they think it's a space age product which must have all these artificial ingredients. But even though it was modern, it had very common ingredients that were all 19th century inventions.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about the company today. It remains a family-owned business?
Yeah, so the Durkee Mower Company is still in existence. The two partners that started, Fred Mower and Alan Durkee. Fred passed away in the 50s, but Alan continued on, and then his two sons operated it, and now it's the third generation.
Okay, great. Well, there's another aspect of, I suppose any product that's been around for a long time is going to contain the story of a nation in it somehow. But you also write about how Marjorie Mills, am I remembering her correctly? She was a reporter at the Boston Herald Traveler, and that she has a particular connection to fluff and women in the media as well.
So she was the first female reporter for the Boston Herald, worked her way in, convinced them to just take her on for the summer and made herself indispensable, and then was the editor for the women's pages. So before there was the food section and the living section and the fashion and celebrity, it was all under the women's pages purview. And she would write a lot about different food recipes, as you might imagine. And then she went on to do different food endorsements or product endorsements, sort of like you can think about Oprah now saying, you know, good things, or Martha Stewart. So she would do store appearances and radio appearances. So she had a radio show where the food products would be the sponsors, and she'd have all kinds of celebrities, and she was such a well-connected person politically in Boston. She was actually known as Dame Boston, and was a major player until her death, and mentored a lot of people in the Boston journalism scene, even into her 80s.
Yeah. You know, overall, I'm kind of amazed that for a century, this product and this company has remained independent. It didn't get bought by any giant food conglomerate.
Not for lack of trying by the big bad Kraft company. Part of why Fluff owns the market now is because Kraft bought up a lot of those small businesses that were all those other marshmallow cream companies across the country, bought them out, shut them down to claim their market share for themselves for Kraft marshmallow cream. But in the 1960s, they realized there really wasn't enough money to be made in marshmallow cream and stopped sold off that division. But then eventually got wrapped. They purchased it accidentally back. So Jet Puffed Marshmallow Cream is a Kraft product, but they kind of don't market it with the same enthusiasm.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking about the 100-year history of fluff, but I'm going to posit that it has a century at least ahead of it. And one of the reasons why is because fluff has been in space. Let's listen.
It's like opening the refrigerator. You got all your different stuff that you want to have. Drinks, meats, eggs, vegetables. And then we get some of our specialty stuff, some of our favorite stuff that your family can send up. In fact, I like Fluffernutters, and so I got sent up some fluff so I could make my Fluffernutter with peanut butter.
That's astronaut Sunny Williams, who took Fluff with her into space. I love that.
She makes a Fluffernutter before every one of her spacewalks. So she's got the record for number of spacewalks, and I attribute that to the power of Fluff. Because she can't have crumbs in outer space from slices of bread, she puts it on a tortilla. And has it every time.
I think it's good space food, right? Because it's sticky, so it's not going to float away in the cabin of the International Space Station. Just quickly, we've got a couple tweets here. Someone says, we had to drop an egg that was sitting in a container, and we designed it. We dropped it from over 20 feet, stuffed it with fluff, and they won the egg drop competition. So
wow.
It's also an engineering tool. That's terrific. Well, Mimi Graney is author of The Sticky Sweet Story of an American Icon. Fluff, The Sticky Sweet Story of an American Icon. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much. This was a lot of fun.
And thanks for sharing your fluff memories. That's it for today and for the week. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.